Ready?
Listen.
Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Health and Social Services Committee to order. Time is 1:33 p.m. February 2015. We are going to start our two-year process on these bills, and we'll see how things flow over the next 2 years. But the composition of the committee this year, we have Senator Johnny Ellis, Senator Bill Stoltz, Senator Peter Kelly, Senator Kathy Geisel, and myself, Stedman. So we've got a pretty much a broad spectrum from around the states and different backgrounds to help us conduct this business. We also have joining us today Nancy Jones, the Senate Record Secretary. She'll be working with the committee. Cody Grusendorf from the LIO staff will be sitting back there. And then Christy Jameson from my staff is a committee aide. So that's basically the committee team. We'll take the business is comes before it. Senator Kelly, I could see he's looked at the fiscal notes already. But he won't have a shot at this bill, this fiscal notes, for some time. But we're going to take care of the bills as they come before the committee, and we'll have some informational presentations, a lot like the last couple of years, but we won't have a lot of presentations. Just to have presentations will be more problem solving and working on some issues, and we'll pick up the pace of the committee a little bit. I haven't set the agenda for next week yet, but I anticipate we'll be meeting next week and get this process rolling. Okay, well, today on the agenda we have sponsor substitute for Senate Bill number 1. It's the first hearing on this bill. We're going to introduce the bill, have a sectional, walk through the sectional analysis, have a brief presentation by the bill sponsor, and then we'll continue on to the public hearing. And we're scheduled to go from 1:30 to 3. We will not be going overtime. There's other committees that come in behind us. And I'd like to remind everybody to try to turn their cell phones off because they interfere with the recording system, and it's also disruptive to the presenter sometimes, and distractions. With that, I'd like to go ahead and have the bill sponsor come forward, jump in the hot seat, and tell us what he has for the committee to consider. After he introduces himself, of course.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Senator Peter Machicki, District O, Kenai Peninsula, and Chairman Stedman and the House Committee, thanks for agreeing to hear this bill today. It's my hope, with everyone's help here, that we can save lives and spend less on health care. SB1 seeks to safeguard working Alaskans and their children from the adverse health effects of secondhand smoke by providing a statewide smoke-free law for work and public places. As a conservative Alaskan, Mr. Chairman, I actively support a philosophy that works to limit and reduce the role of government in our daily lives. And I believe Thomas Jefferson got it right when he said, legitimate powers of government extend to such acts only as are injurious to others. In this case, I believe that both the right to breathe smoke-free air and the significant documented public health risks of secondhand smoke compel us to view the protection of Alaska's labor force and their families as an appropriate governmental responsibility. Similar comparisons include the government role in establishing speed limits, seatbelt laws, motor vehicle design safety improvements, electrical codes, pipeline safety laws, and agency responsibilities that ensure industrial employee safety regulations. There are places in our society, Mr. Chairman, where regulation is simply the right thing to do, and it's largely why we are here today. As judicial philosopher Zechariah Shafii said in the Harvard Law Review in 1919, he said, your right to swing your arm ends just where the other man's nose begins. SSB1 helps to protect the rights of Alaskans who choose not to smoke. And current law prohibits smoking in the workplace in many areas of our state, as well as in healthcare facilities, schools, child care facilities, public meeting rooms, and government buildings. Over one half of the population of our state is currently protected by similar laws to Senate Bill 1, and that's in Bethel, Anchorage, Juneau, Barrow, Dillingham, Haines, Skagway, Petersburg, Klobuch, I say that right? Nome, Unalaska, and Palmer are currently living under SB-like laws, very similar. These laws are well-established, strongly supported by citizens and businesses. In fact, the record shows they've survived local challenges to reverse the laws once folks realized the benefits and the lack of negative impact on businesses. For Alaskans living in the remaining areas of the state, they simply don't have the ability, don't have the health powers to pass such a law. So why is a conservative willing to take on this issue? The reasons are simply to protect the lives of non-smokers and the liberty to breathe clean air, as well as reduce the staggering health care costs of secondhand exposure to tobacco products. Many of these costs are borne by government and at great expense to taxpayers. This critical public health issue, I believe, a primary function of why we're here. And the annual economic loss to Alaskans because of secondhand smoke is estimated in the many millions of dollars, with an estimated direct loss of life of 60 Alaskans per year from secondhand smoke. The number of primary smoke cause fatalities is much higher. Nationally, exposure to secondhand smoke kills more than 41,000 adult non-smokers from coronary heart disease and lung cancer each year. This is more than four times the total of the DUI fatalities each year in the U.S. While our DUI laws are rightfully stringent, our response to stopping the enormous loss of life to tobacco smoke inhalation has been comparatively lax. Many Alaskan families, including mine, continue to be adversely affected. My children and I lost my father last year. You all remember. You're very kind and supportive. Peter Frank Machicki. He made his choice to smoke. This isn't about smoker's choice to smoke. The fact is, his choice to smoke in our home gave three of our four siblings respiratory problems. I'm the fourth. I'm the lucky one. But the others have suffered from that. It does not remove, this bill does not remove the right of the smoker to choose to smoke. Rather, it limits a smoker's ability to adversely affect the health of Alaska's non-smoking employees. In other words, the bill simply asks smokers to take it outside in an effort to protect Alaskan employees. More than 800 Alaskan businesses and organizations, many hundreds more individuals that represent all regions of the state, have already signed it on in support of a statewide smoke-free workplace law. We also have a couple of hundred letters of opposition. I do want to point out that we went through the letters of opposition. Essentially 100% of them simply don't like the fact that electronic cigarettes are included in the bill. They do not haven't stated they oppose the basic premise of the bill about protecting Alaskans from secondhand smoke. I believe there are very many well-meaning governmental processes that are simply examples of the lack of common sense in many of our laws. And right now we're dealing with one of them. It's called positive train control. We're about to spend $160 million in the state of Alaska, billions across the U.S. And if you look at the numbers of the incidents of Americans that we'll protect, it averages about six Americans a year. At the same time that we have something called OSHA, our federal government, through the power of the lobbyist, has denied dealing with the effects of secondhand smoke. So out of respect for all of you on the Hess Committee and the public, we will be listening to all of your comments. The bill before you may become a better bill as we go through this long process. And I just want you to know that we're open to all of your ideas. SB 1 reflects my core belief in the self-evident truths espoused in our Declaration of Independence, a desire to conserve life, to protect our liberty to be free of secondhand smoke related to lung and heart disease, and enjoy the pursuit of happiness free of this unnecessary public health risk. This bill is not heavy-handed. It comes with no imposing enforcement action. All this bill does, Mr. Chairman, all it does is it asks smokers to take it outside out of respect for their neighbor's right to breathe clean air. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to hand it off to my very capable staffer here, Mr. Chuck Kopp. He's going to give a full overview of the bill and the detailed sectional analysis. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Chuck Kopp, staff to Senator Machicki. Just to get right into it, Mr. Chairman, this is about healthier citizens and spending less on health care and also addressing workplaces and public places.
Could you pull your mic up a little bit, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 1 offers a uniformly applied safeguard from secondhand smoke that is currently not available to the public. A 2012 Dittman poll showed 82% of Alaskans supported a statewide smoke-free indoor air law that includes restaurants and bars. You have with you a big binder of over 862 resolutions of support from organizations and business that represent every district in Alaska for statewide smoke-free indoor workplaces, and there's over 1,000 supporters total that we have contacted so far. There is conclusive economic proof that smoke-free air laws do not have adverse economic consequences for restaurants and bars subject to them. And I refer to the 2007 Cancer Journal for Clinicians, which is under in your packets, and that refers to the economic impact of clean indoor laws, and also our own 2014 ICER report done here in Alaska studying the Anchorage smoke-free policies, where they found that there was no adverse economic impact and good support for it. So what does SB1 not do? That's, get this thing to click here. There, thank you.
Could I think, Mr. Kopp, just before Senator Stoltz corrects the chairman, we need to make sure that our presentations are identified, the names of authors on them or whatever, some identifying documents, so later on we can see who put these things together. Obviously, I assume that you put this together.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and those two articles that I just quoted were the Cancer Journal for Clinicians. It's in the committee packet, and that's the title of the report is Economic Impact of Clean Indoor Laws.
We'll get on with your presentation, but if you could, when after the meeting, just maybe do an update on it with a label so when we post the documents, people can see where the authors.
From the office of Senator Peter Machicki and the date of the presentation, yes. I assume. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll do that. Okay. So SSB 1 does not ban smoking. Only requires those who choose to smoke to do it in a manner that does not threaten or harm others, and the same for e-cigarettes. What does SB 1 do? It provides a statewide smoking prohibition in enclosed public spaces. This would include retail stores and shopping centers, enclosed areas at restaurants and sport venues, entertainment and sport venues, government-owned or operated places, buildings or residences to provide paid child care, health care facilities, the Pioneer Homes and Veterans Homes, which are under Department of Health and Social Services, vehicles that are places of employment, and certain marine vessels. Included are schools and parks for children, outdoor arena seating, and areas within certain distances of windows, air intake vents where smoking is prohibited. The bill does require the commissioner to adopt regulations for filing, processing, and investigating reported violations of the smoking prohibition. Next slide. Department of Health's role in enforcing and implementing the statewide smoking prohibition role is limited to providing education and responding to complaints. The bill allows the commissioner to delegate to other agencies any of the responsibilities to enforce the bill's prohibitions. And the bill also requires a person who is in charge of a place where smoking is prohibited to display specific signage and requires the department to furnish the signs to those who request them. The Division's Public Health Tobacco Prevention Control Program, Mr. Chairman, which they currently have, is responsible for developing public education materials regarding the requirements within the law for educating business owners, grantees, and the public on the specifics of the law. SSB1's foundational source document is the 2014 Surgeon General Report, the most recent we have in the last 50 years of Surgeon General's reports that utilize the best available evidence for understanding the health consequences of smoking and exposure to secondhand tobacco smoke. We have all heard the staggering statistics of secondhand smoke, and the most recent data may suggest to some that this is a public health emergency. The next slide, focusing on exposure to secondhand smoke in the last 50 years, if you just drop down to the bottom two categories, lung cancers caused by exposure to secondhand smoke, 263,000, and heart disease caused by secondhand smoke, almost 2.2 million. That's 2.5 million people that died in the last 50 years due to secondhand smoke exposure, and almost 21 million Americans. So smoking is still the leading cause of preventable disease and death in the United States. 2.5 million non-smokers died from lung cancer or heart disease from a secondhand smoke. More than 100,000 babies due to sudden infant death syndrome and respiratory arrest. And in context, you know, we lost many, this is many times the number of American combat deaths in World War II, and it's 30 times the number of U.S. deaths from the 1918 flu pandemic. So what have we learned in the last 50 years? Well, we know there's adverse effects on health of infants and children, and we know that it causes disease in nearly every organ of the body, and it kills nearly 41,000 non-smokers every year. This is, as the Senator said, it's four times the number of the DUI fatalities. In 2013, there were 10,046, and in our 50-year history, Mr. Chairman, of DUI laws, from the time I was in public safety in the late 80s to present date, our standard has gone from a 1.5 to a 1.0 to a 0.08 breath alcohol, and we have mandatory jail. And it's a national standard in all 50 states, and that's to address the 10,000 average fatalities a year. So comparatively with the over 41,000 fatalities, you might say we're under-responding at this point. The next slide shows the known risks that are causally linked to secondhand exposure for adults on the right side of the slide and children on the left. Stroke, highlighted in red, is the most recent addition from the Surgeon General's office that we now know as causally linked to secondhand smoke. The average annual loss for smoking is approaching $500,000, or half a million people, I'm sorry, 500,000 people. And we know that exposure to secondhand smoke has nearly an immediate impact on our cardiovascular system within 30 minutes, based on this report, based on best available evidence. There is no safe level of secondhand smoke exposure, and the increased risk of stroke is 20 to 30%. The costs are significant. They're in the billions of dollars. Nationally, our state estimates based on American Cancer Society estimates are 60 people a year. You'll hear from some of those people that are fighting that battle right now, secondhand smokers here in Alaska, and more than $1 million a year. We know there is a causal relationship between the implementation of a smoke-free law or policy and a reduction in coronary events among people younger than 65. This is about a question of rights, the choice to smoke versus the need to breathe. This does not prohibit smoking. It only requires that those who do so do it in a manner that does not threaten or harm others. So let's talk about e-cigarettes. E-cigarettes, we know, heat and vaporize a solution that typically contains nicotine via a battery-powered heating element, and the aerosol is inhaled, and then the user exhales it into the environment. There's lots of science, lots of discussion on either side of this issue. The next quote there about the aerosol, exhale contains nicotine, ultrafine, metal particles, volatile organic compounds, and other carcinogen toxins. It's noted in the sources at the end, but that was Dr. Stanton Glantz from the Director for Center Tobacco Control Research in California. There is almost 470 different brands of e-cigarettes on the market today and thousands of flavors. And the primary issue with the numbers is the profusion of brands combined with the strong appeal to the youth market. We have a maturing science. There is no FDA regulation right now, no quality control for an industry standard, and we don't know exactly what's in the vapor. There certainly is a continuum of risk depending on which instrument is being employed, but most of them are made in China. And some of them are known to put toxic stuff into the aerosol based on quality of work. So there is a continuum there. The inhalation exposure is what we are concerned about from what we don't know. And finally, inhalation from nickel and chromium, those are both known to be toxic and carcinogenic if there is exposure. Next slide. According to Alaska law, it is currently illegal to sell or give any product containing nicotine to anyone under 19 years of age. And because e-cigarette retailers do not need a sales license endorsement to sell their products like tobacco retailers do, there is no program of compliance the state has to check for youth sales in place for these retailers. The two proven interventions highlighted in the Surgeon General's report that we know does work are comprehensive tobacco prevention and control programs, which we have in our statute, and I underline there our own statutory language in AS4429020, which addresses our state program. One of the things that we recognize that the department has the responsibility to educate the public about the lethal effects of exposure to secondhand smoke. And the second item that we know is effective is smoke-free workplace and public places laws. We know this will reduce the incidence of heart attacks, that air cleaning technologies and ventilation systems cannot effectively protect the public health, and smoke-free workplace laws do reduce tobacco use among smokers. I kind of hit several times that we can elect to harm ourselves but not be allowed to injure others by doing so. That's a basic principle in one's personal exercise of freedom, Mr. Chairman, that we don't infringe on the other person. The legal activities that we assume daily that have risk, like driving a car, shooting a gun, we do bear the responsibility not to hurt others. Senator Michikee previously stated that half of Alaska is protected by a local law from secondhand smoke, and the remaining large population boroughs do not have the legal health powers to enact local health-free laws. In summary, there's a large percentage of Alaskans that agree they should be protected from secondhand smoke in the workplace based on the Dittman poll I referred to earlier. And the support for smoke-free indoor workplaces includes a strong majority of current smokers in Alaska in that same poll at 56%. Alaskan support for this policy is high throughout every region of the state. And the last two slides are the source documents for this slideshow.
Do we have any initial questions before we're going to walk through the sectional here? Does any committee member have an initial question for Toastmasters? Senator Stoltz.
Just a quick clarifying question. My document here to you from Senator
Michikee refers to the total of support for Senate Bill 1. I think that record should reflect that's a running tab on the previous Senate Bill 209 as well. This year I've gotten, there have been no near 1,000. This appears to be a running total from the previous year in complying with documents.
And we can clarify some of that as we get on, move through the sectional analysis.
Veracity is very important to me, especially right. Some of the.
I understand. So we'll clarify that as we go forward. Just to let people know online, we have 55 people to testify. There is no way we're going to get through the public testimony today. I can assure you of that.
Mr. Chairman?
Just a second. So as we work through the process here, the sectional analysis could take 15 minutes to an hour, just depending on how involved we go, and then we'll pick up the public testimony portion. So I just want to give people a heads up. Senator Michikee.
To clarify, the individual letters are from this year. The business letters, many of the business letters are from the last version.
All right. Okay, that's fine. We'll deal with that as we go forward. Let's get the sectional analysis on the table so we can walk through this bill. And if you could, whichever one of the two presenters want to do that. And then after that, I'd like to have, hopefully there's somebody here from the department to speak on the bill. And then we'll go from there.
Mr. Chairman, once again, Chuck Kopp, staff to Senator Michikee. Section 1 of the bill creates a new Article 4 prohibition of smoking in certain places. It prohibits smoking under prohibition of smoking 1835-301 in enclosed areas in public places. This would be entertainment venues or sports arenas, in vehicles used for public transportation, at public transportation facilities and depots, retail stores, shopping centers, places of public assembly on property owned by the state or other unit of local government. Moving to page 2, Mr. Chairman. It will prohibit smoking in certain enclosed areas. These would include office buildings, hotels, motels, restaurants, bars, retail stores, common areas in apartment and multiple family dwellings, places of employment, a building or a residence used to provide paid childcare at healthcare facilities, in a vehicle that is a place of employment, public and private educational facilities, at a residence where paid adult care is provided, residences in a healthcare facility, hotel or motel, and on a marine vessel operating as a shore-based fisheries business under Title 4375.
Just, you're taking a breath here. Let's just stop there and see if there's any questions. Could you give us a definition on line 11, any vehicle that is in a place of employment for those at home, so it's making it a little easier to follow, what that is? And then also, if you can elaborate on shore-based fisheries business, what that is.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. So a taxi vehicle for hire would be a place of employment. A truck drivers, that's their place of employment. And your second question, Mr. Chairman?
On line 16, please. Marine vessel.
Yes. A shore-based processor, it'd be like a cannery that's tied up to a dock, a floating cannery, where it's working shoreside rather than out at sea, but it's processing fish. So regulated under Title 43, Chapter 75.
Okay. If you want to.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And then from time to time, maybe refer to the line number. So if one of the colleagues here at the table are jumping around in the documents, it'll make it easier for them to come back online to where you're at.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Page 2, lines 18 through 31, prohibit smoking outdoors in certain places at public and private schools, state municipal parks designated as places for children to play, seating areas for outdoor arenas within 50 feet of an entrance to a healthcare facility, 20 feet of an entrance, open window, or heating or ventilation system air intake at a place where smoking is prohibited, or within a reasonable distance of these places if it's on a marine vessel as determined by the vessel operator in charge. Page.
So I assume that that means the skipper of the ship can designate whatever reasonable is.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The layout of the deck of a boat and the confining spaces, we thought was best left to the skipper to say how far away is reasonable from the entrances and air intakes.
And then when we get into enforcement, I'd like you to come back and explain to the committee how the enforcement of that would take place and what responsibilities the state may have on enforcing some of this stuff.
Yes. Okay. Page 3, lines 1 through 24, allows smoking at a retail tobacco or e-cigarette store. These are standalone shops, and it defines what these are and what these are not. Page 3, lines 25 through 30, allows smoking in a vehicle that is a place of employment used exclusively by one person, that would be like long-haul truck drivers, and on a marine vessel when it is engaged in commercial fishing or sport charter fishing. Page 3, line 31, and page 4, lines 1 through 8, allows smoking in a private club that does not serve alcohol and is not a place of employment, unless the club is hosting an event open to the public. Page 4, lines 9 through 16, allows the department to adopt regulations authorizing smoking in standalone shelters. Under notice of prohibition, page 4, lines 17 through 30, this describes the obligations of employers.
If you just stop there, just on line 9, the operative word may adopt, so they're not required to adopt. Is that right? Line 9?
Page 4, line 9. They may adopt for a standalone shelter if they, it's discretionary at that point in the language. Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead and continue.
Notice of prohibition, page 4, line 17 through 30, describes the obligations of employers and owners of places and vehicles where smoking is prohibited to post no smoking signs within those places or vehicles at or near the entrances. And it requires the Department of Health and Social Services to furnish signs upon request. The duty of employers and building managers is covered on page 4, lines 31 through page 5, lines 1 and 2, where it says an employer may not permit an employee, customer, or other person to smoke inside an enclosed area at a place of employment. And then in lines 3 through 5 on page 5, describing an owner, operator, manager's responsibility where smoking is prohibited to not provide ashtrays or other smoking accessories for use in that building or place.
Okay, go ahead.
Powers and duties of the commissioner, page 5, lines 6 through 16, says that the commissioner of health and social services will administer and enforce the requirements of this act and adopt necessary regulations to implement these requirements. It allows the commissioner to delegate enforcement authority to another agency and permits peace officers to enforce the provisions of this act.
So I guess one of the questions when we get to the commissioner is the enforcement issue of this and what the department's going to do and regulations and so on and so forth and how they are going to implement this.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, there will be representation. I think there is representation in the room for the department, but my review of the bill and last year's testimony, they have a tobacco compliance program in place where they do this now. So, Mr. Chairman, under the powers and duties of commissioner, we just covered that. So under public education, page 5, lines 17 through 26, this would require the commissioner of health and social services to provide a program of education to employers and other affected members showing what they are to do in combination with the current comprehensive education program currently in place in Title 4429-020A14, which talks about preventing youth initiation of tobacco use, promoting cessation among tobacco users, and educating the public about the lethal effects of exposure to secondhand smoke. The non-retaliation section is on page 5, lines 27 and 31, page 6, lines 1 through 3, which prohibit employers from discriminating against current or prospective employees because the employee or applicant cooperated with or initiated enforcement of a requirement in this act, and it prohibits owners or operators of vehicles or other places subject to this act from retaliating against customers or other members of the republic due to their cooperation with or enforcement of the requirements in this act. Conflicts with local requirements on page 6, lines 4 through 9, establishes that a municipality may adopt and enforce local laws with additional prohibitions on smoking. Violations and civil penalties, page 6, lines 10 through 31, and page 7, lines 1 through 2, requires the Commissioner of Health and Social Services to establish the regulatory process for investigating violations of this act, which include prohibition of smoking, posting the notice of prohibition, the duty of employers, and non-retaliation, and establishes that the Commissioner, upon determination that a violation has occurred, may file a civil complaint in district court to enforce the requirements or designate an employee of the department to issue a citation for the violation. It establishes a maximum fine, Mr. Chairman, of $100 for a violation of the prohibition of smoking and a bail schedule to be not more than $100 for a first failure to comply, $200 for a second failure that occurs within 24 months of the first violation, and $500 for the third and each consecutive failure to comply within 24 months of the second violation. And it further establishes a civil penalty of not more than $1,000 for a violation of the non-retaliation prohibition, and it allows the department to accept fine payments by mail. The next section, citations and fines, on page 7, lines 3 through 31, and page 8, lines 1 through 15, does seem a little redundant, but it has to do with peace officer citations and forms and procedures per Title 1225, which talk about the citation formats, payment of citations, and adjudication of citations, which the section above that we just went through has more to do with HESS enforcement. So this section allows a peace officer or an employee designated by the commissioner to issue citations for violations of the law. A peace officer must personally witness the violation to issue the citation, but this is not the case for an employee designated by the department to issue a citation. The Supreme Court establishes the bail amounts for the violations that do not exceed the maximum fines allowable under this section and establishes requirements for citation format, payment of citations, and adjudication of those citations. Under injunctions, Mr. Chairman, page 8, lines 16 through 18, this just permits the commissioner or another affected party to bring a civil action in superior court to enjoin a violation of the law. The definition section is on page 8, lines 19 through 31, and page 9, lines 1 through 30, providing definitions for business, commissioner, department, e-cigarette, employee, employer, enclosed area, healthcare facility, place of employment, public space, and smoking. And then section 2 repeals the existing statutes regulating smoking in public facility. Section 3 amends the uncodified law and makes it so that the bill applies to violations or failures to comply that occur on or after the effective date of section 1 of the bill. Section 4 adds a new section that permits Department of Health and Social Services to adopt regulations to implement section 1 of the bill. And section 5 says that section 4 of the bill takes effect immediately under AS 110070, and that's the time statutes when a bill becomes law and takes effect, the immediate effective date. Section 6 says that the rest of the bill is effective on October 1st, 2015. That concludes the sectional, Mr. Chairman.
We have questions on the sectional, the committee member. Any other questions for the bill sponsor before we ask the department to come forward? Senator Stoltz.
Yeah. Just a broad question. It's, right now, DEC is the implementer and enforcer of smoking statutes. I guess I come from a different brand of conservatism. My health and social services is not a group I like to give those types of enforcement powers to. No offense to any given commissioner, but that's just not a department I like to empower with that. And I, as we explore this bill, I assume over multiple hearings, and then it'll come to another committee where I have a little bit latitude.
Senator Stoltz.
Sure. No, I do as well, but different. I have a bigger hammer there, or a hammer. But the issue of we're dealing with a toxic pollutant, that seems to be the general description of that, and DEC has been the agency that's been in the department that's been in charge of this. And I just have a general philosophical concern about Hess having those types of powers.
Okay, well, thank you. We'll cover some of that coming up. Do we have any other initial questions for the bill sponsor? Okay, well, thank you for presenting the bill. Do we have anybody from the department? If you want to come forward, do we have a list?
Mr. Chairman, just before I walk away, if you get to public testimony, there's an individual that's sort of a priority person that can't stay on very long. His name is Mr. Timmons from Fairbanks. If you can just jot that on your notes.
I've got that here.
Thank you.
That's fine.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jay Butler. I am Chief Medical Officer for the Department of Health and Social Services. With me is Jill Lewis, the Deputy Director of the Division of Public Health. I recognize that we have a number of people waiting to testify, so I'll be very brief.
If you could just stop there. We're more concerned about quality than throughput.
Okay.
So what we want to do is work through this piece of legislation in the normal schedule. There's a couple people that testify that want to be up early for different reasons, and we're going to take care of those when we get to that point. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you for that. Over the past 50 years, as has been mentioned, there's been an increasing body of evidence showing the health effects of secondhand smoke, specifically some of the outcomes that are most highly associated with exposure to secondhand smoke include sudden infant death syndrome, respiratory infections, middle ear infections, and asthma attacks in children and in adults, lung cancer, stroke, and coronary artery disease. We've made huge strides in reducing the rates of tobacco smoking in Alaska. Nationally, we've seen downward trends in lung cancer rates. Unfortunately, exposure that is not necessarily by the choice of the individual continues to occur. Many non-smokers are exposed to secondhand smoke and have little choice about that exposure because their jobs lead them to work in areas where the air has been contaminated by cigarette smoke. I would also want to add that it's an issue for child health also, although I recognize this this bill may not entirely address that issue. But in the recent National Health and Nutrition Evaluation Survey, a national representative sample, it was found that 40% of children had metabolites of nicotine in their bloodstream as a marker of exposure to secondhand smoke. So I certainly look at it as an issue that's important for employee health, child health, and has the great potential to reduce healthcare costs, as you've already heard today. So I'd be happy to take questions.
I'd like to know what your opinion is on the electronic cigarettes.
Electronic cigarettes are an area that we need to know more. We know some, not everything we'd like to know. I think there's a great deal of uncertainty right now. I think there's reasons to be concerned about e-cigarettes and many reasons not to assume that they are safe. And my own opinion is that until more data are available, they should be addressed in the same manner as cigarettes.
Thank you. We have any questions for the good doctor here? Senator Stoltz.
Dr. Butler, thank you for appearing. If you look at the health concerns in Alaska, what's the greater concern, obesity, health problems, or tobacco?
Senator Stoltz, through the chair, I'm a grandfather. It's a little bit like asking which of my grandsons I like more, although there's more statistics to guide me in answering that question. It's really probably a 1-2 punch, but in terms of in a very close battle. But if we had to prioritize based on which of those issues we can more easily address and translate into reduced healthcare costs and better health, I would say tobacco.
So tobacco is a large, Mr. Chairman, is a tobacco is a larger health concern than obesity?
Well, again, it's hard to, if we have only one health concern through the chair, that's where I would go, yes.
My mind wanders of remedies we have for tackling obesity, just like we're doing this. We'll just leave it there, Mr. Chairman. I was trying to get a straight answer, but that's difficult sometimes.
Senator Kelly.
I just wanted to see if you wanted to qualify that. Tobacco secondhand smoke versus obesity.
Sure.
You said tobacco on it.
Yep.
So what's the answer is, which is the greater comfort,
thank you,
in your opinion, secondhand smoke or obesity?
Oh, thank you, Senator Kelly, through the chair. And let me also say, Senator Stoltz, I didn't mean to try and be complicated in the answer. It is a hard question in terms of tobacco versus obesity. I imagine you've seen the political cartoon of the two grim reapers, one labeled obesity, one labeled tobacco. They're both killers. Regarding the question from Senator Kelly about secondhand smoke or obesity, I would go with obesity.
Thank you, Chair. Mm-hmm. And you can say the same thing about that philosophical argument, guns against butter.
This is our first meeting, but I'll call on you, Senator Stoltz, when it's time for you to have a question.
I'm sorry.
And I'll give you ample time to ask your follow-ups. Do we have any other questions? Okay, now, I guess, well, this is your first time to the Health or the HES Committee, I think?
Yes, sir.
Well, welcome. We'll probably see you many times as we deal with health issues. We do have a nurse here at the table that will help a little bit, and the rest of us don't have much medical background.
Well, thank you. I look forward to it, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And if you can identify yourself for the record.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. I'm Jill Lewis. I'm Deputy Director for the Division of Public Health.
You look like you were ready to run away. We I'd like to know what the department's opinion is on the bill and the enforcement issues in it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The enforcement part that we anticipate would be handled actually by the Division of Behavioral Health. They currently have the retail tobacco sales to minor tobacco enforcement team. They would combine the work for this bill on the secondhand smoke with that work They envisioned that it would be a series of letters, notices, warnings that would minimize the cost for investigations and the need for sanctions. This has been successful in other jurisdictions that have similar laws to this as being a sufficient level of enforcement for compliance.
And we're struggling with trying to shrink a lot of departments due to budgetary constraints. Mm-hmm. So how do you deal with issues like this that would appear to me to be an expansion of your organization when in fact the financial dictate is coming down that we have to deal with it in the opposite direction?
Well, we consider this a form of passive enforcement, and the division feels that under this kind of a complaint-driven model where they would respond to complaints with a series of letters and warnings is something that they can currently absorb. Something that was going to be more of an active enforcement role would require additional resources.
Okay. So explain to the committee how that would work if someone's smoking and ignoring it on a street or on a boat or in a car. And I see in the bill that the long arm of the law could come knock on the window. But how do you envision your department dealing with that?
Right now we envision that we would have an 800 number website where citizens who witness something or want to make a complaint, they would be able to enter that complaint. Then the tobacco enforcement team would monitor those and respond to them initially with a letter, and then if that doesn't cure the problem, there would be a warning and continuing escalation if necessary. At the same time, the Division of Public Health has that role of education that had already been pointed out previously in testimony. And so we have grantees all over the state that already work on reducing tobacco use. And those grantees, part of their role is educating people about tobacco use. And so they would reach out to the same entities that had been complained about and talk to them about how they can help comply and provide some technical assistance on compliance.
So does the department want these additional duties? Or do you feel it's best in some other department in the state? Which alludes to a previous comment by Senator Stoltz.
Enforcement of this nature is not currently a core function of any of the department's divisions. Senator Stoltz is correct about that. We do feel it's work that we could absorb and take on, but it is not a core function.
Okay. We have Senator Kelly.
Chuck. Can I talk to Chuck again?
We'll bring the bill sponsor back up. Senator Giesel.
Thank you. Jill, on page 7 of the bill, it talks about a peace officer, issuing a citation if it happens in the officer's presence. So I assume that law enforcement is also involved here somehow.
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, law enforcement is involved. Certainly, a law enforcement officer that witnesses a violation is entitled to make that citation on their own. The more passive type, if it comes to the point where a citation needs to actually be issued, then the department envisions that we would contact local law enforcement, and that would be the entity that would actually issue the citation on our behalf, because there's powers that we can delegate within this bill. It's not something that we envision where we would have to, say, travel out to some community just to issue the citation. We would make use of local law enforcement. And this is already a close partnership that the tobacco enforcement team has doing the youth underage smoking. They already have a good relationship with local law enforcement.
Senator Stoltz.
Thank you, Senator Stoltz, Mr. Chair. All the references have been made to tobacco and secondhand smoke. Is this bill specific to tobacco? What does smoking mean?
We can ask the bill sponsor and get a definition here in a little bit. Does the department have an opinion on that?
Mr. Chairman, or Senator Stoltz, through the chair, I would recommend, and again, this is wearing the physician's hat, that it also be addressing marijuana, so that we're not in a situation where marijuana smoking is legal but tobacco smoking is not, which I think then creates a lot of complications for enforcement in terms of sorting out, so what is it that you're smoking? I think that uncertainty with enforcement is even more complicated when we start talking about e-cigarettes and vapors, which are very highly flavored and may not be readily identifiable.
Thank you.
Do we have any other questions for the department or the doctor? Okay, well, thank you for the testimony today. If we can have the bill sponsor up briefly for a question or two, and then we'll go on to the public meeting portion. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Colleague Senator Kelly has a question, and then I have one.
Yeah, on page, I got a couple just simple ones. On page 4, line 3, it says, from the previous page, it begins, nothing in this section prohibits smoking at a private club that does not serve alcohol. What's the, and that has some other qualifiers there, but what's the point in whether there's alcohol there or not? Do you know that?
Well, Senator Kelly, we try to match it as closely with the bill that is essentially serving half the population of the state right now. That was in the Anchorage ordinance. What we try to do is disrupt those that are the regulations that are in existence as little as possible.
Do you happen to know what the
Chuck, and Chuck can answer what that specifically means?
Through the chairman, Chuck Kopp, for the record, staff Senator Machicki. Senator Kelly, the key word there is serving alcohol, because that would involve an employee being in the building to serve that alcohol, since it's a smoke-free workplace act, so to speak. It's the main thing is to protect an employee.
Mr. Chairman, so I assume if you removed alcohol, what you're trying to do, serving is the operative word, not alcohol. Alcohol further restricts it. You'd think you'd take out the word alcohol. A private club that does not serve beverages is probably what you're trying to do.
Or that just maybe serving is the operative word, or you have an employee.
Yeah. And so you actually answered my question. You said this was the essentially mirrors the Anchorage ordinance. Okay. And would you describe to me, Mr. Chairman, would you describe to me if what the current provisions are for communities that have done this versus communities that have not? So we have communities in the state that have adopted this. We have communities that have not. What are we trying to achieve here if the communities have the ability to adopt this on their own?
Well, through the chair, Senator Kelly, many communities don't have the ability to do that. They don't have the powers that allow them to regulate smoking in their communities. That's my goal. In the last version, we had an opt-out version for communities that did have the powers to opt out. We can talk about that moving forward, but we wanted to bring you a clean bill and thought there might be some things to discuss going forward. And then, Mr. Chairman, there were some questions asked that I'm also prepared to answer that the good doctor may not have had the answers for.
If you just to follow up on Senator Kelly before we go into that, is had a similar type question. We had in your earlier presentation, you had listed half a dozen or so communities that have smoking ordinances on the books. And I think that's what Senator Kelly was alluding to. Why are we using the long or the powers of the state to reach down to our municipal level and dictate to them?
Well, Mr. Chairman, again, some municipalities have that power, but many areas in the state simply don't. And this allows us to protect areas of the state that do not have health powers. Those other municipalities
would be included in this. It would be a statewide bill, but the vast majority of the folks that we're dealing with that are not covered are in unincorporated areas of the state. Again, remember, half of the people in the state currently, and there's not half a dozen, there's a long list of folks that are covered, but approximately half the population of the state is currently under this regulation.
Right, maybe we can get back to the committee on the communities. I think you're talking about first and second class cities and unorganized boroughs, and draw a finer line there. And do we have any other questions for him? Senator Giesel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Going back to Senator Kelly's question, page 4, lines 1 through 6, I'm thinking about American Legion clubs, which serve alcohol. I believe what this is doing is saying that it would prohibit smoking in American Legion clubs. Have you consulted any of those folks? And
I have, Madam
Chair. Just interested in their thoughts. Thanks.
This is my experience with the clubs I've spoken to. There are a couple of people that are really enjoy the smoking part of it. There are a few people that are vocal against having smoking in the American Legions and the AMVETs. And there, I've been approached by a lot of people that are very supportive of this, that sort of don't like to get out there. We're going to ask them to engage, don't like to get out there in support of it being smoke-free. There was a nationwide effort by AMVETs recently on going smoke-free nationwide, because what they're finding is they're returning, the younger families that are returning from Afghanistan and Iraq and around the world simply are not going to the veterans clubs in the numbers that they saw the older generation, because they're unwilling to bring their families into the an environment that's not smoke-free.
Thank you.
Sure.
Do you have any other questions for the bill sponsor? We'll start with Senator Stoltz first and then go back to Senator Kelly. Yeah.
Thank you, Senator Sidman, Mr. Chair, Senator Machicki. This, as I read this, and I always stand to be corrected, but, a VFW facility that has patrons who picked up that pesky habit when they got the free Chesterfields and the Lucky Strikes in their K rations and developed that habit, and they might be in their 70s and 80s now. This doesn't even allow the, as I read this, any portion of, you can't even have a segregated, non-service area where folks can stay inside, and so you're not sending an 80-year-old Korean vet out in the cold to smoke. This is pretty absolutist as I read this, and disabuse me of that notion if it's not correct.
No, it is correct. What they're capable of doing is having a smoking shelter that may be heated outside, but you are correct in that the way it's currently written does not allow smoking in the veterans clubs.
And apologize, a little bit leading pejorative question, but I appreciate your answer. Mm-hmm.
Senator Kelly, you had a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. OSHA, through the Department of Environmental Conservation, enforces indoor air quality regulations in the state, correct? As a workplace regulation? The answer to that is yes. it's not in your bill. So talk to me a little bit about that. If OSHA is in doing air quality enforcement, whether it's grease fires or cigarettes or who knows what, are the places where cigarette smoking is allowed, are they exceeding air quality standards as determined by OSHA? And if they are, then why don't we enforce it through OSHA? And if they're not, then I guess what are we doing? See where I'm going with that?
I see where you're going with that, Senator Kelly, through the chair. I have not measured. I don't believe OSHA has. And just in the municipality of Anchorage, the Department of Health and Social Services is responsible for enforcing the smoke-free ordinances. But federal OSHA, same reason. I mean, you're going to see opposition to this bill. We know what the opposition is going to look like when it's organized. They're very well funded. I'm not an anti-corporate guy, as you all know, but it's been very difficult to classify tobacco smoke as a material that state or federal OSHA is willing to regulate. And I think it's as simple as that. I think if you measure the impurity of indoor air and you compare it to some of the absurd things that federal OSHA does regulate, you would find that it was far exceeding any of the other materials that are arguably far less dangerous.
Follow up, Senator Gill?
I've always been under the impression that secondhand smoke and the dangers are overstated. I hear all about, all these tens of thousands of deaths from secondhand smoke, and I couldn't cite you a study, but I've heard of studies that say that that's overstated. And it isn't like we haven't seen that kind of thing before. I mean, you've seen it when we're dealing with issues, all of a sudden somebody comes up with a number, and what you find out after you pass the bill is the number was wrong by a long shot. So I'd be kind of curious to know really what the truth is about secondhand smoke, because I don't want any more anyone else does. I don't smoke, and even if I did, I didn't want to be around secondhand smoke. What's my point? I got a point here.
The point is, Senator Machicki, if you have in your research any research documentation, you can get to the chairman, we'll forward it on to the committee members dealing with secondhand smoke. I'm sure there's ample studies that will probably fill volumes.
That was my point.
I would be happy to provide it. It's pretty hard. You're going to hear some junk science stuff coming from folks on the other side, whatever that other side is. I would be happy to provide you with ample evidence of the fatalities associated directly with secondhand smoke.
Good, because we want to keep going, and we got to try to get some people's public testimony. But go ahead.
The junk science, that's my problem. That's what I'm afraid of with the secondhand smoke, because we've seen it, particularly in environmental issues. We've seen, global warming is nonsense, and yet people throw those statistics around like they're absolute hardcore facts. So that's what I just want to make sure, is that we're not dealing with junk science about 41,000 deaths. It sounds really high. I would know a bunch of dead people from secondhand smoke, and I don't know a single one. I've never even heard of one.
Senator Stoltz, let's keep rolling here.
Senator Sedman, just a follow-up on the, just to bring the clarification later, there was a reference to the corporate funding of the opposition. The only advertising I see is from state-financed advertising campaigns and supporting this. I would like the department to give the committee an accounting of the promotional efforts that they spend. That's part of the advertising campaign, and it's, I don't think the state's a corporation. Okay. I would like to get that on the record at a further meeting.
Right, we can work on that. Any other final comments before we go to the public hearing from the bill sponsor?
Yes, there were three questions that weren't answered, if I may.
Yes.
They'll be quick. Smoking is defined on page 9, starting on section 11. Means using an e-cigarette or other oral smoking device or inhaling, exhaling, burning, or carrying a lighted or heated cigar, cigarette, pipe, or tobacco, or plant product intended for inhalation. You would not be able to smoke marijuana inside. The number of citations in the city of Anchorage, if you're envisioning a heavy enforcement level of activity, it simply doesn't happen. It simply doesn't happen. It's essentially making a statement. I don't know if there have been a single one in the last couple of years. I'll get those number for you. I think the total is something like 6 since the bill passed. It's simply making the message that we would like to protect workers from the effects of secondhand smoke. You know what? If you've got a little business out in the middle of nowhere, it's complaint driven. Someone's not going to magically show up and write you a citation. So I would keep that in mind instead of sort of suggesting that it's more heavy-handed. And the other comparison, with all due respect, is if this were about controlling the size of a sugary drink,
I would be opposing it 100%. There's no comparison. This is about where you force on others for their right to breathe clean air. Now, if you could drink a sugary drink and somehow inject that in another's body and make them obese, they would feel differently. This is a different situation, and I think it's worthy of your respectful consideration, and I very much appreciate your time today, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. We're now going to move on to the public hearing portion. Like I mentioned earlier, there's like 60 people, and we have 23 minutes. I'm not a mathematician, but you want to keep it on point. We're going to limit the testimony to 2 minutes. And please stay on time. I don't really want to have to terminate the testimony. We're going to start first with the off-net. If you can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and then speak to the bill. I'd like to start with Jerry Timmons, please.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. My name is Jerry Timmons. I'm from Fairbanks. I am a business owner in both Fairbanks and Anchorage, and I'm a lifetime non-smoker. I have submitted written testimony, so I won't repeat it due to time. The summary is that I spent 20 years in smoke-filled rooms as part of my management career with BLM. I was usually the only non-smoker, and that would never happen today in government offices, but it did in the 70s and the 80s. And less than 90 days ago, I was diagnosed with lung cancer, and they followed with the removal of my left lung. The upper lobe was cancerous, lymph nodes, and sections of the lower lobe. And I'm on chemo now. My life is severely impacted by secondhand smoke. However, with this legislation, I truly believe that we can either avoid it or reduce it for many people in the younger workforce that exists now. And in order for them to take a check home, put food on the table, no one should have to work in the secondhand smoke of others. And I can imagine that there's many entry-level positions, whether dishwashers or waiter assistants, that presently just have no choice. And as a business owner, of course, I dislike the constantly growing demands of government laws and regulations affecting us. But secondhand smoke, if it can be reduced in Anchorage, if it can be reduced in Bethel and across other parts of the U.S., I don't know why we can't do it, and this bill does accomplish that. So I fully support Senate Bill 1. The statistics are horrible if you do get lung cancer. And again, I've never been a smoker, but I've been around secondhand smoke in my entire career, not really having a choice in the earlier days. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Next up, Kathy Wasserman. Kathy Wasserman.
Thank you. This is Kathy Wasserman with the Alaska Municipal League. To me, this is all about local control. While I understand the sponsor's reason for doing this, and I think it's a good intent, and I certainly don't like to be around a lot of smoke, I think there are reasons that the other 152 municipalities have not adopted anything. Sometimes you're right, they don't have health abilities, but also there is no way to do law enforcement in most of the, at least 115 of our municipalities. I just take, for instance, Pelican. It would be difficult to get 50 feet away from a building, a window, a door, or anything else. And right now, we also have marijuana laws that are coming up, and a lot of communities are trying to decide whether they should allow smoking lounges, and this basically cuts all that off at the knees. Again, I think this is local control. Until the state feels safe to give the municipalities, the small ones, tools to enforce the laws that they have in place now, this seems futile. We don't even have courts out there. So to call a trooper and say, excuse me, we just have someone who lit up a cigarette, would be totally, totally useless for the small communities. They have no way to deal with this. And also, I know Health and Human Services right now has trouble even reacting to communities that have trouble with rampant alcoholism or children's issues. And to now pile this on top seems a little bit unnecessary. So I think if municipalities want to adopt ordinances, for the most part, they're able to do that, and I would hope that the state government would think twice about taking on this power that should be at least local, and the people can give their, if a community wants to pass this, I'm sure the local people will step up and speak to this. Thank you, Senator.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Next up, Melissa Wanamaker.
Thank you, Senator. This is Melissa Wanamaker from the American Heart Association. Heart disease is the number one leading cause of death in America, costing $312.6 billion in health care services, medication, and lost productivity. This number is anticipated to triple in the next 30 years without significant collective action. Heart disease is 80% preventable. Smoking is one of the top preventable risk factors. One single cigarette per day increases your risk of heart attack by 65%. A full pack a day is 100%. Right now, half of Alaska isn't free to make this choice for their self. So that is why I'm calling in full support of Senate Bill 1.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Next up, Christine Luby.
Hello? I'm sorry, I hit mute by accident. This is Kristen Luby with the American Heart Association in Anchorage, and I am calling also in support of SB 1. We have seen at the American Heart Association that long-term exposure to secondhand smoke, such as that occurring in a home or a workplace, is associated with 25 to 30% increased risk for coronary heart disease in adult non-smokers. We've also found in studies from around the world that have now provided evidence for the reduced incidences of heart attacks and hospitalizations after the implementation of smoke-free air laws. As you've heard throughout the past hour or so, only half of Alaska's population is covered by smoke-free workplace law. I personally am very fortunate to live in an area where there is a smoke-free workplace law, but so many people are not, and I really would encourage you to give these people the freedom to live and work in a smoke-free environment. Thank you for your time, and please support SB 1.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Jack Duckworth.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. My name is Jack Duckworth. I'm from Ketchikan, Alaska. Our community is not smoke-free. It is a lot of work to try to go get all the signatures that you have to get and get, you know, to get that to be smoke-free. I personally have never smoked. I've been a vegetarian. I've been exercising my whole life. I got diagnosed with tonsil cancer, and 99% chance it was due to secondhand smoke from my parents, because I lived with them for the first 18 years of my life. And it's all about the free radicals that do the damage, and it does it for long term, and it comes out. If people died immediately, this wouldn't even be a discussion, but because it's over 30 years, it kind of leaves it up in the air. But I'm in full support. I wasn't emotional about this bill, but I got it because I'm affected by it too, and I didn't do anything to get it. So I'm full support, and I hope you guys support that, because a lot of people that won't have the power to do it.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Next up, Jamie Morgan, another one from the Heart Association. If you could please not repeat the testimony from your previous Heart Association.
Sure, thank you. This is Jamie Morgan. I'm based in Sacramento, California. I am the Government Relations Director for the Western States Affiliate, and I do associate my comments with the other Heart Association representatives, and just want to urge you to please support this bill. We're very proud to stand with Senator Majicki on this and the other key supporters, and look forward to continuing this discussion. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Next up, we're going to jump up to Kenai, and we're going to start with Jackson Blackwell, please.
Thank you. My name is Jackson Blackwell, and I'm from Tulalip, Alaska. I'm 15 years old and attend Tulalip High School. I'm actively involved in my community and am the student representative to the Soldotna City Council, as well as other committees and organizations. I'm here to speak to you, members of the Senate Health and Social Services Committee, to urge you to pass Senate Bill 1 out of this committee. When I am older, I would like to be a lawyer and live in Alaska. I would like the place that I work and raise my family to be smoke-free. After all, everyone has the right to breathe clean, smoke-free air. People can take their smoke outside and not pose a health hazard to others around them. I am passionate and believe in this bill because I don't think that anyone should be exposed to the toxins and chemicals in cigarettes, as well as the hazardous chemicals in e-cigarettes. As a teenager, I've seen firsthand people smoke, vape, and I feel very uncomfortable around it. I have been in public places where I have left because of these devices and cigarettes being smoked in front of me. Being exposed to the metallic aerosol is harmful, and cigarette smoke is just as harmful for my health and to the others around me. In states like California, they have declared electronic cigarettes a health threat and that they should be regulated just like any other tobacco product. I am personally concerned that because these products are not regulated by the FDA, then we don't know exactly what is in them, that they pose various health threats. It makes me nervous because I don't want to harm my health because of doing something just as simple as going bowling or out to eat with my family. I think that all these products, e-cigarettes, and they should be banned in public places because not everyone in Alaska has the opportunity to ban smoking in their community. I think this bill should be passed for the right to be free to breathe. I thank you for your time listening to my testimony in regards to Senate Bill 1 and hope you consider and pass this bill out of the committee. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your testimony. Megan Silta.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Megan Silta. I represent myself and my peers. I am a student athlete at Soldotna High School, and I'm fighting for smoke-free Alaska because I believe that everyone has a right to a healthy body and healthy lungs, and secondhand smoke takes away that right. I'm representing all of the students at Soldotna High School that can't be here today because we're all starting to work, and when we're going into the work field, we want smoke-free environments because that will help our attitude towards working, and I think it'll help customer satisfaction as well. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. And we're going to do some jumping around, but we're going to do one more in the Kenai LIO because we're going to run out of time here in about 10 minutes, so it's going to be a hodgepodge around the state, so it's going to be the luck of the draw. Crystal Schoenrock? From Nikiski and the Kenai.
Yes, I'm Crystal Schoenrock, and I own the Fallen Far in Nikiski. And I'm a small business owner, and I can't afford to lose any of my business. And my customers I have talked with extent. I have people that come in that do not smoke, but they come in and play darts and pool, and they socialize. And they feel that this is another form of control from our government, which I feel the same too. And you go on about secondhand smoke. Well, what are you going to do about the exhaust from the vehicles and air pollution, jet fuels, oil plants, platforms? All of that causes health problems too. So let's get somebody Johnny on the spot and see if they can't take care of that too. My dad lived to be 100 years old and he smoked Camels every day. His brother lived to be 104. So there you go. Figure it out. So I just feel it should be up to the bar owners and their patrons to decide what they're going to do in their establishment, being that we all pay our taxes and our permits and our licenses. And thank you for your time.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. We're now going to jump up to the Mat-Su. And Melissa Mudd.
Good afternoon. My name is Melissa Mudd, and I'm a 33-year resident of Alaska and a 32-year resident of the Mat-Su Valley. Good afternoon, Senators. Few actions by state lawmakers will have a greater positive impact on the health and well-being of Alaskans than passing a statewide smoke-free workplace law. This law will protect employees and customers from the dangers of secondhand smoke, saving thousands of lives and millions of dollars for taxpayers. In addition to the health benefits, the numerous economic benefits this legislation would provide to our state are undeniable. Businesses, employees, and taxpayers would benefit from statewide smoke-free legislation because of insurance coverage, health care costs, and other direct and indirect costs of secondhand smoke exposure. Opponents argue that business owners have a right to choose whether they want to allow smoking inside their establishment. While I respect that business owners have the right to make decisions on behalf of their business, that right should not override an individual's right to not have his or her most private property, their lungs, harmed by the choices of others. Businesses should not continue to put their employees in harm's way. Many cities have adopted comprehensive ordinances that prohibit smoking in indoor workplaces, but unfortunately, many Alaskans live in unincorporated cities or rural areas where no entity exists to pass or enforce this type of legislation. Without a statewide smoke-free workplace law, thousands of Alaskans will remain unprotected from secondhand smoke exposure. I request that you support the passage of SB 1 and with it, the health of all Alaskans. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Staying in the Matsu LIO, Guy Carroll. Guy Carroll.
Hi, good afternoon, Senators. My name is Guy Carroll, and I'm here today to speak in opposition to SB 1. I'm a lifelong Alaskan who is very proud that Alaska does what's best for Alaskans, not because it's what everyone else is doing. I smoked for 27 years and tried all the methods to quit the nasty habit. Chantix, Wellbutrin, gum, lozenges, patches, acupuncture, and cold turkey. None of which worked until I tried vaping 2 years ago, and I haven't smoked since. My argument's in two parts. First, I don't believe a statewide smoking ban is necessary. Many communities, cities, and individual businesses across Alaska already have smoking bans in place, leaving only adult establishments where smoking's permitted. The patrons and employees have the choice to be in these establishments. It's almost as if you're saying that it's okay to purchase cigarettes, thereby collecting the taxes from them, but because they're so harmful to everyone, there isn't anywhere to smoke them than a field out in the middle of nowhere. I believe the business owner should have the right to decide what works best for their customers and employees. Second, being able to vape in a vape shop, which is an adult establishment for those 19 and older, is why customers are there instead of buying online. Being able to sample the e-juice flavors and sometimes even try the hardware before buying it is what brings people in the door and supports our local businesses. Vaping is not smoking, and I have submitted the study Clearstream Air Project to show that it is, and to show what is, and more importantly, what is not in the air of the vape shops. I hope you'll look this over carefully. Although it was done in 2012, it's one of the studies that helped me decide if vaping was safer than smoking when I started 2 years ago. I believe the conclusion sums it up very well by saying that it could be more unhealthy to breathe air in big cities compared to staying in the same room with someone who is vaping. Thank you for your time and listening to me today.
Thank you. You're right on 2 minutes. Now we're going to jump to Delta. Christine Mason.
Christine, just step out.
Okay, how about Audrey Brown?
Yes, this is Audrey Brown in Delta Junction. Short statement, I fully support SB 1 in view of all the science that demonstrates the egregious negative health impact caused by secondhand smoke and the accompanying significant negative economic impact as well. Alaskans have particularly experienced this firsthand, especially among the health effects observed in our Alaska youth. Thank you.
Thank you. Now we're going to jump up to Fairbanks LIO. Dean Gustafson.
Hi, my name is Dean Gustafson. I'm from Fairbanks, Alaska, and I come here as a private residence. I support Senate Bill 1. There are a number of individuals who signed resolutions in support of Senate Bill 1, but unfortunately could not give testimony due to work conflicts. I'm a veteran who served in the United States Marine Corps. I'm a father of a three-year-old boy and a devoted husband. My grandfather was recently diagnosed with lung cancer, and my mother has been a lifelong smoker who on a constant basis exposed my sister and I to secondhand smoke by bringing us into restaurants at the time that were not smoke-free. Due to those actions, my sister has complications with her lungs. Senate Bill 1 is designed to save the lives of Alaskans. I urge this committee to do the right thing and vote yes on Senate Bill 1. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Now we're going to jump out to Kodiak. Carmen Lundy.
Good afternoon, and thank you for giving me a chance to speak. My name is Carmen Lundy, and I am the director of Kodiak Char. A just government does not or should not have the authority to ban smoking on private property or to tell smokers to quit or punish them if they do not. Smokers are adults and deserve to have their choices respected by others. We here in Kodiak, using common sense, believe our system works extremely well. We have 18 non-smoking establishments and 3 that allow smoking, giving everyone a choice as it should be. The reason I respect these business owners' decisions to go non-smoking is because no federal, state, or local government enacted a law forcing them to do so. We believe and always have these choices should be made by the owners. I, as a smoker, will miss going into these non-smoking establishments as they will miss the money I spend, but I simply cannot go out into the freezing cold Alaskan weather to smoke a cigarette. I believe the state's money and time would be better served if they put their efforts into eradicating the massive illegal drug problems in this state and let the business owners make up their own decisions. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Now we're going to jump up to Anchorage. Isaac Hewell. Isaac Hewell. Is Isaac Hewell in the LIO? Isaac Hewell.
Yes, this is Isaac Howell. I own Cold Babes 907. I'm here in opposition of SB1. I would like to start my testimony by stating that my vape store does not carry any products endorsed by Big Tobacco, nor is it affiliated with any tobacco companies. My store does not carry cigarette products or any Chinese e-liquids. My store carries high-quality vape gear as well, known as Mods and Tanks and Addies, none of which resemble or predispose those thoughts of electronic cigarettes. My vape shop does... Sorry, I misspelled myself. These are not Blues, Enjoys, or Markens. These are high-quality tank systems that people take pride in owning. Most vapers are not friends of the big tobacco industry. We spent years being slaves to Big Tobacco and celebrate the day that we started vaping and broke the addiction from cigarettes. Anyone who vapes can tell you the health benefits that they have seen themselves. I'm sure you'll hear testimony about that today. If this bill passes in its current form, it will decimate small mom-and-pop businesses known as vape shops. Our customers rely on flavors to help them break the addiction of cigarettes. If they cannot sample flavors before they buy or try out a mod to see if it will fit for them, why would they buy from me when they can go online and buy cheaper? I ID every person that comes into my store to sample or to purchase. That is something that is not done on online purchases. This is my opinion and a fact. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Last up today, because we're out of time, is Patty Ginsburg in Anchorage. Patty Ginsburg.
Okay. Yeah, I'm here. My name is Patty Ginsburg. I'm an Anchorage resident and have lived in this community for something like 33 years. I am unusual in that I am a 10-year survivor of stage 3B lung cancer. In 2004, I was diagnosed with cancer. I had been a smoker many, many years before. I had also been exposed to lots of secondhand smoke. Most people don't survive. We know from good science that secondhand smoke causes lung cancer and other very serious problems. I hope that this committee will pass on Senate Bill 1. I believe you will save lives and protect the rights of Alaskans to breathe clean air on the job. Thank you.
Okay, and thank you for your testimony. I'm sorry, but the time's up for today's hearing. We'll set this bill aside for further work and kind of have some conversations with the committee members, and we'll see where we go from there, but we'll have ample time to deal with this because this is early in the session. Also, for those that are in the room that have signed up, I'd encourage you to go to the senators' offices and talk to them directly, because it's pretty clear that this bill gets a lot of attention around the state, and I thought it would be better to try to reach a broader range today across the state on the telephone, and those that are in the audience could have face-to-face meetings with the five of us or our staffs. With that, that'll conclude the meeting today. We'll be posting tomorrow the meetings for next week. You can expect that we'll have some activity next week. We're adjourned.